I respect my sister enough not to intervene in your friendship, he says, but has to add, even if I think you can be a piece of shit. Thank you for that, I say dryly. It's not a nutritionally balanced day until you've called me a piece of shit. I shut my tablet off as a notification pops up. Why are you here? The camp away, he says. I never received my invite. You've got to be shitting me. I stopped sending you charity function invites a year ago, I remind him. You usually don't show. On the occasion that you do grace us with your larger-than-life peacocking presence. Classy, peacocking. You never RSVP, I say, but I'm not done. In 365 days, you've never come to complain. So why now? This is your biggest event of the year, he tells me. I'm sincerely hurt that you wouldn't even text me about it. You don't text back! I'm nearing the edge of a cliff that I want to push him off of. But I can't. He's family. Pop up our text conversation right fucking now. There's a row of about 50 texts you've never responded to. I gesture from my chest to his to mine. This is a two-way street. Charlie doesn't deny that fact. Am I invited or not? No, I say firmly. You're not invited because if I make the announcement to the press and you don't show, then that's on the philanthropy. Then don't make the announcement. I don't want surprise guests. Charlie lets out a vexed breath. You just don't want me there, and you can't admit it, like a coward. He stands, I stand. Someone raps the door. We quiet when it swings open, and Pharaoh stops himself from entering fully. He sees Charlie. He sees me. Pharaoh says to me, Do you need me to come back later? No, I'm almost done. I watch Pharaoh slip inside and shut the door behind him. He leans his shoulders against the wood. My focus returns to Charlie. You're unreliable and erratic. You're not invited. And I'm not joking around, Charlie. If you show up unannounced, I'll get security to escort you out. I doubt I'd actually follow through with the threat, but I need to make my point clear. Charlie doesn't blink. You'd use our security against me? There are only 5 bodyguards in Omega. One is at the door. And what would you tell them? Treat Charlie like the enemy? No. You're not my enemy, you're my family, and the amount of energy I've spent trying to include you in the past could row a goddamn fleet of Viking ships, but you refused to jump on board. You wanted to do your own thing, and I get it. Go do your own thing, stop fucking with mine. Charlie sits partially on the edge of the table, hand in his pocket. He turns his head to my bodyguard. Tell me you see how big of a self-righteous asshole he is. Standing leisurely but on guard, Pharaoh says coldly, I see how big of a prick you are. Charlie arches a single brow. We both could be right. Unlikely. Then you're a self-righteous asshole too. Charlie stands. Looks like you're a perfect match for each other. I go rigid, even though he's just referring to my bodyguard-client relationship. At that final note, Charlie exits, and I'm left hoping and praying that he'll leave the camp away alone. 31. Maximov Hale. Pharaoh inspects my childhood bedroom like it's a relic in a museum. He wanders to the wooden dresser and picks up the 4th degree action figures. His brown eyes swing to the black painted walls, X-Men chalk drawings, and all the Batman posters. He's the first person outside of my family that I've ever let into my world this deep. And it's not a fucking fantasy. I've dreamed up Pharaoh Redford Keene in this bedroom 1,000 damn times, and usually he's only on the bed. You know, I prefer my reality, where he's a hell of a lot more than a good fuck. I grab a wet bone off my orange rug, tossing the thing on Gotham's dog bed. Pharaoh whistles at the racks and racks of comic books and graphic novels that tower to the ceiling. He runs his fingers down the spines. I lean on my desk, arms crossed. What does your old bedroom look like?
Messier than yours.
Pharaoh flips through a hefty graphic novel called Duncan the Wonder Dog by Adam Hines. One of my favorites.
Nirvana, Blink-182 posters tacked up, school books only, an expensive surround system, and a boxing bag.
He rotates the novel vertical as the panels flip.
In short, I was cooler than you.
I force an irritated smile. It's like you want to be kicked out of my bedroom or something. His mouth stretches.
Or something. He returns the graphic novel to its original spot and continues to meander around. I can't stop watching him. It takes a great deal of effort to check my canvas watch. We can't stay up here long. My parents should be home with Luna's cake any minute. November 30th marks Luna Hale's 18th birthday. Time fucking flies. I remember when she was just a baby, and we'd tap each other's noses and say, beep, beep. As requested by Luna, no big birthday parties, no surprise family guests. Just a small dinner with immediate family, and later her best friends Elliot and Tom Cobalt will come over for a sleepover. Pharaoh is here because my little sister has bad taste and has invited him to her birthday since she was 9. Despite how much he aggravated me, Luna always liked him. Here he was, a pierced and tattooed guy who contrasted his blue-blooded, clean-cut family. When you're different from the pack, it takes more guts to be yourself. Luna is drawn to people who experience that.
I have a watch too, Wolf Scout, Pharaoh says. I see the time.
He sinks down on my small, twin-sized bed. Comforter is a Spider-Man print, his brows pinched together. What?
This is one of the most uncomfortable beds I've ever sat on.
He rocks his ass on the mattress.
Fuck. It's hard.
He leans back on his hands.
Is this why you're so stiff all the time?
The sexual innuendos stroke my cock. My brother probably switched out his shitty mattress with mine when I moved out. I flex my muscles and straighten up, eyeing his lip piercing for a brief second, then his hair. His hair is black. He dyed the strands the other day, and I descend into this image of him, pretty much consumed. It's not just that he appears older, or that his intimidation cranks to a higher, newfound degree. He's attractive with any hair color, any piercing, even minus all the tattoos, or add them all together. Honestly, it's because the first time I ever saw this guy, he didn't have white hair, or blue. When I first met Pharaoh, his hair was jet black, like right now, today. Pharaoh kicks a pillow aside and props his shoulders against my headboard. I imagine joining him, and he'll pin me to the bed. Then I'll roll him over, his stomach to the mattress. Gripping his waist, tugging down his black pants enough to expose his perfect, round ass, my mouth trails along his neck and descends to the spot between his muscular shoulders.
Maximov.
His deep voice pitches me from a fantasy. I lift my eyes. He smiles. What? I combat. Pharaoh bends a knee.
Are you thinking about the philosophical meaning of the world, or are you thinking about fucking me in the ass?
Christ. I lick my lips, wanting my mouth against his mouth. Badly. I near the bed. I wasn't inside you yet.
Yet,
he repeats, his gaze sweeping my body in a boiling wave. He gestures me closer until he stretches over and catches my wrist. He wrenches me onto the bed with him. I'm on top of Pharaoh, my hands on either side of his head, but he hooks his legs around my waist and swiftly reverses me like I'm an MMA opponent. My head hits the pillow. He's on top. Pharaoh brings his mouth near mine.
You may dominate in the pool, but when it comes to submission moves and grappling, I'll always have you beat.
I breathe heavily, chest rising and falling beneath him. One night I asked Pharaoh to show me a submission move. True to his nature, he didn't go easy. Not even on his boyfriend. I had to tap out of the chokehold in less than 20 seconds. Pharaoh straddles my waist and sits up to reach into his leather jacket pocket. I'm about to say we can't fuck here, but I stop myself when no condom appears. He holds a black box. The same black box I once gave him. The asshole merit badge is stitched to the back of his leather jacket, so I know he's not returning my gift. Pharaoh discards the box behind his back and clutches the object in a closed fist. He leans closer to me. In an affectionate, deep breath, he whispers,
"Hold out your left wrist."
He's put a fucking spell on me. I never hesitate. I raise my wrist, our eyes melting against each other. Pharaoh opens his tattooed hand, revealing a gray paracord bracelet, which can be unwound into rope for survival. We watched Mad Max Fury Road the other night, and I mentioned how the paracord bracelet on Tom Hardy's wrist was cool. That feeling, one that I've only felt with him, returns like a tidal wave.
welling powerfully inside my chest and also weightless, light enough that I could fly. His fingers buckle the bracelet around me.
Just so you understand, you're much hotter than Tom Hardy.
I laugh, my eyes burning with emotion. Pharaoh drinks in my reaction, his chest collapsing in a strong breath.
Didn't I tell you? He whispers, his gaze nearly glassing. It's the little things.
This is what I missed in my life, and I can't imagine never discovering this feeling, never having him. I clutch the back of his head, my mouth nudging his open. We kiss deeply, intensely, enough to raise my back off the mattress and my chest to meet his. We part so I can whisper,
"Pretty sure you called it stupid, ordinary shit, not the little things."
He laughs against my mouth.
"It's all the fucking same."
"Muffy!" My brother screams from down the hall.
"Fuck."
Pharaoh quickly climbs off me and we're both on our feet. The second time Xander screams my name, his voice sounds less panicked, more demanding, like, "Get your ass over here." "I'm being summoned," I tell Pharaoh on the way out into the long hallway. His stride matches mine. I stop in front of my brother's room. A sign hangs on the ajar door and says in Elfish, "Turn back, you fools." I hear more than just my brother's voice. All three of my siblings are inside. Before we enter, Pharaoh asks,
"Do you want me to wait downstairs?"
"No," I cut him off. "I want you to be here." I pause. "Unless you don't want to." Pharaoh kicks the door open wider in response. We go in together, the room a mess of fantasy trade paperbacks, video games, oversized beanbags, and a 6'4" armored knight stands next to his 4-poster bed. I zero in on Luna waving a piercing gun at our brother. She wears a crop top that says "Space Babe" in black joggers. Xander towers above her, already 6 feet at 14.
"I said I would do it. I didn't say you could do it for me."
"Come on, Xander. I'm an expert now."
"What? You've got a fucking infection in your tongue."
Disbelief coats his words. He swings his head and sees me and Pharaoh watching.
"Good. You two, tell her to back away with the weapon."
"Give it."
Pharaoh approaches, and Luna willingly hands him the piercing gun.
"Happy birthday,"
he tells Luna, and then inspects the actual device.
"What are you doing?"
I ask Luna and motion with two hands to the piercing gun. "And happy birthday, too."
"Thank you, thank you."
She nods to us both and then picks a star sticker off her round cheek.
"And I'm celebrating my 18th year on this planet."
She places the sticker on her eyelid.
"Xander and Kenny said they'd get piercings as a birthday present to me."
Kenny lies on Xander's bed, flipping through the television channels. She shrugs.
"Seemed easier than going to the mall to buy a present."
You know Kenny Hale is the princess of Goth and all things supernatural. A lot of you worship the fuck out of her, and you hope to one day be the recipient of her insults and death glares. You've even made video compilations of her epic eye rolls and "no bitch" face. And you wish you were part of her girl squad that includes Winona Meadows, Audrey Cobalt, and Veda Abbey. I know her as my 13-year-old tough-as-nails little sister who has a soft side that she only allows family to see. And I love the hell out of her. Fair warning, I used to change this one's diapers and feed her peas that she'd throw at me. You fuck with Kenny, I'll slit your throat, and then she'll shove you to the bottom of a volcano. Luna eyes the piercing gun in Pharaoh's hands, then turns to Xander.
"You're still going to get your ear pierced, right?"
"Yeah."
Xander sits on the edge of his bed.
"But Muffy's going to do it, not you."
Pharaoh tilts his head at my brother.
"How is he any better than Luna?"
5 years older than her, I defend myself.
"Tell me one body part you've ever pierced, Wolf Scout."
"Burn,"
Kenny says, still flipping TV channels.
"None."
Xander rakes a hand through his bedhead hair.
"Mafia's the best at everything."
Pharaoh laughs hard. "Shut the fuck up," I tell Pharaoh, trying not to smile as I near him and Luna.
"I'm serious,"
Xander says to Pharaoh, causing his laughter to fade.
"Mafia's never been below average at anything. Every time he tries something new, he's practically a pro on the first try."
"It's magic,"
Luna says certainly.
"He's a demon,"
Kenny says.
"One of the ugly ones that live in toad holes."
Pharaoh's smile has split his face in half. "Because my sister called me a toad hole demon." He finds a way to focus and he tells them,
"I can guarantee all three of you that I'm better than your brother at everything."
They perk up. Very few things, I correct. Some things, Pharaoh amends. Maybe. His brows jump when I concede. I'd much rather Pharaoh, who's experienced, pierce my siblings than me fuck it up. Still, I don't get why we're doing this at all. You seriously want to do this, Luna? I ask. After all the shit that your tongue piercing got you in?
It healed, though, and I love it.
She sticks her tongue out, a lime green ball in the center.
And if all of you get piercings, we'll be linked in sibling solidarity. It's something the Kobolds would do. Don't we have that, too?
Luna stares at each of us, even Pharaoh, like she's mentally grouping us together as the Hale family. A band of fucking weirdos. We're all smiling.
Yeah, sis.
Xander says and then points at Pharaoh and the piercing gun.
I'm trusting you, man.
I'm not piercing you with a $12 Claire's gun. He turns to Luna. You need piercing needles.
I bought some of those too, or really Elliot did. His birthday gift to me.
Get those, rubbing alcohol, cotton balls, and an apple.
Pharaoh listing out random items shouldn't be hot. My cock is obsessed with the weirdest shit.
Got it. Be right back.
Luna darts out of the room.
Is this gonna hurt?
Xander asks. My brows knit. It's a needle. In your ear. Of course it's going to hurt.
Moffy, I'm asking the guy with real piercings.
Pharaoh leans on the bedpost. Getting smarter. I shoot my bodyguard a middle finger.
To aggravate me, he makes a point to only acknowledge Xander.
It barely hurts.
Okay. Good.
Xander bites his nails, a bad habit. Any physical changes to our bodies, the media hones in on. Hair color, piercings, tattoos, even bruises and cat scratches. So knowing the extra attention will come, I'm kind of surprised Xander would want a piercing. It's either out of his love for Luna or he's hoping it'll distract tabloids from his sudden growth spurt. I check my watch. Mom and Dad should be home any minute. Xander spits out his nail.
What are you getting pierced, Muffy?
My jaw tenses. Probably nothing.
I told you.
Kenny pipes up from the bed.
He's a prude.
Pharaoh pops a piece of gum, his James Franco smile at full force right now. I'm not a prude, I tell my sister, who looks very similar to a gangly, round-faced Luna, except for the dark hair, jet-black eyeliner, mascara, and lips. And even if I were, there's nothing wrong with being a prude. Kenny clicks the remote, absent-mindedly.
That's exactly what a prude would say.
Then the TV lands on a tween channel, and a familiar, catchy pop song blares.
Shit, no!
Xander rotates on the bed to restrain Kenny, who lunges towards the television. I already sprint over and catch Kenny around the waist. Her bony limbs flail and fight to reach the TV. She's 80 pounds. I could easily toss her over my shoulder, but I don't. Because she'd try to bite my ear off.
Let. Me. Go!
Kenny yells. Pharaoh finds the remote and shuts off the commercial. She's still squirming in my arms and trying to launch herself at the TV. Xander blocks his flat screen.
This is brand new. You're not breaking it.
Kenny kicks out, and I tighten my hold. Luna returns with all the piercing supplies, and her old floppy-eared basset hound follows. Gotham runs slowly to each of us and licks our legs. Luna gapes at our sister. Viv, I explain, but also unleash the name that causes Kenny to accidentally elbow my windpipe. Fuck. I cough, hoarsely. Arms slackening on Kenny. I let her go. And she immediately spins to me, wide-eyed.
Oh, hell. Moffy?
I hold out a hand like I'm fine, but Pharaoh reaches my side, a hand on my back. I'm bent forward, palms on my thighs. Stop coughing. I try to straighten up and massage my neck.
Say something,
Kenny demands.
Right now.
At ease, Pharaoh says, how about let him breathe first? Kenny sends a death glare his way.
I'm all right.
I cough one last time into my fist, my eyes watering. I pinch them, and then say to my sister,
I thought you were over, Viv. It's been 3 months since you left for L.A.
Her girlfriend moved to star in a tween show with a lot of dancing and a lot of singing, and they only split to forego the long-distance thing. It didn't break Kenny's heart as much as toughen it. Every time the show or song airs, she's smashed her phone. The television. She's already eaten through her entire allowance for the year. And, in her words,
worth it.
Kenny huffs.
I am over it.
She points at the TV.
That show is just crap.
Not the star of the show, obviously. Viv deserves better. She's much more talented than that. Uh-huh.
Luna nods and hands Pharaoh the supplies. He pulls out a Zippo lighter from his pocket. Maybe you should try seeing someone else, I suggest. Is there another girl you're interested in?
No,
she snaps at me.
And you have no experience in dating, so you just need to chill.
Pharaoh grins and pops a bubble. Being burned by my 13-year-old sister is nothing new. Having her bring up my lack of experience in dating in front of Pharaoh, yeah, that's priceless. Luna tells our sister.
Tom says he'd take you to a bar to get over Viv.
No, Pharaoh and I say in unison.
I meant a lesbian bar,
Luna clarifies. Still, no, I say. Kenny gawks at Pharaoh and me.
I should revoke both of your memberships to the Rainbow Brigade for being so unfair.
She coined the Rainbow Brigade when she was 9, and she dubbed herself the president since she's the only lesbian. It consists of me, Tom, Pharaoh, Oscar, and Kenny. It's all in spirit since we haven't done anything as a group together yet.
I know you've both been to gay bars and clubs.
We're adults, Pharaoh says, chewing his gum slowly. I add, and you were 12 barely a month ago.
I have the heart of a 40-year-old,
she says with complete seriousness. Pharaoh rebuts, you still have the body of a 9-year-old. Kenny glares.
I'm 13, you turd.
Don't call him a turd, I snap.
And you're a turd too.
Pharaoh smiles and produces a flame from the lighter, sterilizing the needle, but he doesn't get far. Gotham starts barking like the front door just opened. My siblings, Pharaoh and I, pile onto the staircase. One part of the house creates a tunnel of sound, and everything my parents say in the foyer is a megaphone to these steps. We can't see my mom and dad yet, and Kenny extends her arm, blocking all of us from descending to the living room.
Let's not eavesdrop,
I whisper to her.
Shh,
she hisses.
They're probably talking about something nauseatingly cute. Just wait.
Xander rests on the banister. Luna plops on a stair, and I turn to Pharaoh beside me. He smiles like, your family, man. Then he passes Luna a piece of foiled gum. I hear my dad first.
This isn't a debate.
He speaks to my mom.
He's legitimately the worst character in X-Men lore. Period. Done. End of story.
He's funny. I liked him.
You can't say that out loud, he tells her. One, it's ridiculous. Two, his name was Gold Balls.
The balls part is not why I liked him,
she combats fiercely.
I know that, Lil. Other people don't, he says. And you're a lying liar because I know he's not even in your top 10. You're just going to stand there and tell me he ranks above Sunspot, Magic, Emma Frost, Cyclops, X-23, or Hellion? Christ, we named 3 of our children after X-Men.
Kenny, Xander, and I all exchange a look. Luna blows a bubble with her gum. She was named after Luna Lovegood, a Harry Potter character. My dad continues.
Can you imagine if Maximov was actually named Gold Balls?
I glower at Pharaoh like, do not speak of this ever. He's dying in amusement. It's palpable, and all over his face. Dear world, stop making my boyfriend who loves to fuck with me enjoy today more than he already has. Sincerely, a peeved human. My mom groans.
Please stop.
Admit he's not in your top 10.
Top 20.
I can live with that, my dad says.
Good, because I wasn't going to change it for you,
she replies. I imagine she's grinning, lifting her chin and playfully crossing her arms. I've seen her do it 1,000 times before.
Ouch, my dad says in mock hurt. Right in the heart, Lil.
It's the only place I can reach,
she refutes.
I'm not sure about that.
Their voices soften, too quiet, which means they're lip-locked.
Mom, Dad, I shout,
and Pharaoh and I reach the base of the stairs first. A huge realization crashes into my chest right now, just as my mom swoops into view with a hearty wave and flushed cheeks. For the first time, I'm about to have a family dinner with Pharaoh as my boyfriend. I get that he's technically here as Luna's guest. He's even off duty as my bodyguard. But the clandestine fact grips onto me. I thought it'd be bittersweet, not being able to share the truth with my family, keeping my relationship a secret, private. It's not bitter at all. I share so damn much of my life with them, with everyone. To have this space meant for only Pharaoh and me for a while feels less confining and just free. No pressure, no expectations. Just me and him. Just us.
32. Pharaoh Keen. As Lily's ex-bodyguard, I consider myself fairly versed in all things Hale. And for as many conversations I've had with Lo, her husband, I've never been apprehensive or afraid, never broken a sweat. But I've also never been alone in a kitchen with him cooking an easy pasta meal for Luna's birthday, while carrying a loaded secret. I'm not just protecting your son, I'm sleeping with him. Oh, we fucked this morning, and I even gave him the best blowjob of his life. He said so. I managed to act casual, not cagey, but I stand on an edge I've never neared before. It's a new feeling, for sure. I fill a pot of water. Lo lights a gas stove. How are you and your father getting along? We're not. I shut the faucet. I haven't talked to him in 2.5 years. I place the half-full pot on the stove. Huh. Well, I think eventually he'll come around. Lo rests a comforting hand on my shoulder. Dr. Keen has been loyal to the families for a very long time. See, they hope my father and I can mend whatever we tore, but that's only going to happen if I leave security and work as a doctor. And I'm not leaving Omega. I'm not leaving Maximoff. He drops his hand to pour tomato sauce in a pan. Dad, Maximoff enters the kitchen from the living room where the rest of the Hale family watches a sci-fi show before dinner. I can help with... No, no, Lo points a spatula at the door. Out. This is the 5th time Lo has shooed his son out of the kitchen. Maximoff narrows a glare onto me like, do something. I lean on the counter. You can't be a part of everything, Wolf Scout. Says you, he refutes. I say I can. At least now we know who's smarter. Me. Pharaoh and I have this under control, his dad cuts him off. Him and me. We're talking. Go spend time with your mom. The one who nudged you awake when you slept as a baby, all because she was afraid you weren't breathing. All right. Maximoff straightens up and shoots me a look like, don't let him know we're together. No shit. After he disappears, Lo asks me, how's the security working next week with the tents? He means at the camp getaway. 1 week left. I removed my radio tonight, but Donnelly has been counting down to the raffles closing. We'll have randomly chosen the 300 entrants by midnight. Then, we all have the arduous task of vetting them in 7 days. I'm of the mindset that if any fucker slips through, we'll handle it at the camp. Preferably with no fists. I've already had 4 bodyguards tell me, better get ready to grab Maximoff, believing I'll need to drag him out of a fight. Everything's now shaded in a new light. I'd drag my boyfriend away from a fight. Not just my client. My boyfriend. I sense an emotional current racing through my veins, at a much higher voltage. I shake salt into the pot of water. Since Maximoff, Jane, and Sully are the only ones attending the camp away besides the raffle guests, we'll put most of the security on those 3 at night. I start explaining the sleeping arrangements to Lo. How? He stirs the sauce, his concern apparent in his daggered amber eyes. Their personal bodyguards will be inside their tent at night, so you'll be sleeping in Maximoff's tent with him. His voice is edged, normal for Lauren Hale. But I pause, shoulders tensed up, and I study his sharp features. Shit, I'm caging a breath right now. I never hold my breath, not unless I'm having mind-blowing, eye-rolling sex with his son. I comb both of my hands through my black hair. Yeah, there'll be another bodyguard from Alpha outside of the tent. No one can unzip it unless they want a broken wrist. Lo stirs silently and then nods several times. We've coordinated everything down to the tiniest detail. It's all taken care of, Lo. I sense his overwhelming parental concern. I turn to Maximoff's dad. I promise you that I'd never let anything bad happen to him. I'm falling in love with your son. I trust you, Pharaoh, Lo says with ease. It simultaneously knots my stomach and relieves me. Our heads swerve as Lily slips into the kitchen, a Star Wars Wampa cap on her head. 3 years on someone's 24/7 security detail is like a decade of time.
Pharaoh,
she smiles. Lily, I hug one of my favorite people in the world, not bending down to her height. I straighten up, arms wrapped around her, and her feet lift off the ground. Lily clasps my cheeks in 2 strong hands.
How are you? Are you eating? Have you hydrated?
My lips rise and set her on her feet. Hydrated, well-fed, I assure. All is well. Lily beams at my choice of words.
All is well. Did you hear that, Lo?
I heard, love. He glances affectionately at his wife. Lily claims a bar stool and splays her hands on the counter.
Muffy hasn't been too stubborn, has he? He doesn't mean to be. He just likes to take on all the responsibility.
I've noticed, I say, and right on cue, Maximoff enters and sits on a stool beside his mom. What are we talking about? He asks. You, I say matter-of-factly. He flashes an agitated smile. Can't figure out any other subject?
Don't be mean to Pharaoh,
Lily says, elbowing his side. His brows pinch. Mom, he's being an ass to me. I lean on the counter. Listen to your mom, Maximoff. Lo dumps spaghetti in the pot. Question. Why have you only been calling him by his full name? Ask your son that. Muffy? His shoulders square. For Christ's sakes, I like my full name and I'm not a kid. I nod slowly, the answer finally coming. You didn't want me to see you as a child. He's 22, but I used to only call him Muffy when he was younger. Lo pretends to be shocked. You're not a kid? Jesus Christ, when did that happen, Lily?
I didn't do it,
she says.
I wanted him to be young forever, like Peter Pan.
Peter Pan doesn't have parents, Lo rebuts. You're taking us out of the picture, Lil.
A Peter Pan with parents, then.
Maximoff watches their interactions with fondness. Then he looks to me. He wishes for that. He's letting himself yearn and long for the soul-bearing love and admiration his parents have. I want to give it to you. All of it.
Pharaoh?
Lily's voice draws my gaze.
Are you seeing anyone new?
I force myself not to glance at Maximoff. I am, but it's complicated. Been there, done that, Lo says. Maximoff frowns and motions to his dad. What the hell was so complicated about you and Mom? You were best friends who lived next door to one another. Lo looks at his son like he's grown hooves. We were addicts who enabled each other.
We were doomed from the start,
Lily notes. You persevered, Maximoff tells them strongly, wanting them to believe their worth. But Lo cautions his children about addiction by using their failures as what not to do. You overcame everything, Maximoff continues. You're goddamn lucky, Lo finishes. Doesn't erase the hard parts, bud. Lily stretches over the bar counter towards me.
Do you have any friends you could introduce to Muffy?
Maximoff looks whiplashed by the abrupt topic change. Mom! I cross my arms loosely, my smile in a laugh. I wish this could go on all night. You don't want me to introduce you to my friends? I ask him. You have friends? He shoots back, sarcastic.
Muffy!
Her mouth drops.
You're a Hufflepuff. Be nice.
Maximoff wraps his arm around his mom. Pharaoh is my exception, Mom, and he hasn't even been sorted. Your mom sorted me last year. Her love for Harry Potter runs deep. Lily nods firmly.
He's Gryffindor.
I blow a mocking kiss to Maximoff. He licks his lips, trying to layer on a grimace, but he fails. Lily observes us for another second, then she asks again,
Do you know anyone that maybe would like to date Muffy, maybe?
Maximoff groans and sighs heavily. We've talked about this. She's always wanted him to stop having one-night stands. Her past is riddled with casual sex partners, and as a sex addict, she fears a destructive path for her son, just based on her own experiences. Before I can speak, Lo wipes his hands with a dish towel and asks me, How old are your friends? I hang on the fringe of most friendship circles that I accumulated in college. I always preferred the other guys from Studio 9, but in this hypothetical scenario where he isn't my boyfriend, I know more than a few people who'd be willing to date the hottest celebrity in town. I want to say, he's mine. He's mine and I'm not sharing him with any fucking man or woman. I grip my teeth once and play along. Around my age, 27? No, Lo says flat out. That's too old. My jaw ticks. It's only a 5-year gap, and my brother married a young girl with a 7-year gap. It comes with too many complications. Gotta nip that before it starts. He points at Maximoff. Heed the advice, bud. He wants easy for his son. I make his every day easier, but if we were together in front of his family and in the public, I'd be one of the most complicated choices of his life. But I remember I'm with a steadfast, unshakable guy. Maximoff stares right at me with resilience and finality that says, I want you. Only you.
33. Maximoff Hale. After dinner and birthday cake, my dad asks to talk in private with me. We're on the back patio. I flick on the pool light so we're not swamped in darkness. I take a seat on the nearest patio chair and he sits on the edge of a lounge chair. "What's up?" I ask. My dad has this severe cut face, all sharp lines, no soft features. When he's serious or contemplative, he's even more uninviting. I've never feared him. Even now, as his jaw sharpens and he pours his intense focus through me. "I haven't brought this up in a year," he begins, "because I thought you needed time to sort through things yourself. But we have to talk about your hair." "Fuck." I run my hand through the light brown strands. "It's getting long, yeah," I say, sarcasm thick, dreading where this conversation may lead. "Maximoff," my dad says, truly serious when he uses my full name. "Just explain to me what's going on. Where's your head at?" I like that my dad does that. Asks me before going down a cavernous path assuming shit. He gives me the chance to explain my side, and I don't waste it. Squeezing a water bottle in my tight hand, I say, "I don't want to look like Uncle Reich. I'm so fucking sick of people comparing me to him." I swallow a pit in my throat. "It's every other day, Dad. If I don't fight like him, then I'm wearing green underwear. It's just complete bullshit at this point." I uncap my water. "And before you say the rumors will never go away, I get that. I'm not trying to convince anyone you're my dad. I have DNA evidence. That's not what this is about." He frowns deeply. "Then what is this about?" My chest hurts, just having to stare him in the eye and utter these words. But it's been a year, and it's time to say them. "It's about people knowing that I love you," I say strongly. "That you're a good dad. That you raised me, and I'd be proud to be like you. But the more I look like him and act like him, the more they disassociate me from you. Why can't my successes be associated with the Hale family? Is it so fucking hard for the media to believe that addicts can raise a good man, a good son?" My dad shakes his head repeatedly, like I see the world from such a skewed lens. "Maffy, I can't think of anything worse for you than you being more like me," he says clearly, plainly, unmistakably. A cold dagger pierces my gut. "The fact that you're more like Reich is my greatest achievement as a father." My nose flares. I grip my water bottle harder, trying to restrain emotion that threatens to rock me. I don't agree with him. I can't agree, but he's sitting here telling me that I turned out okay. Maybe that's a compliment, but I just see my dad tearing himself down to build me up. "I just want to be more like you," I say. "You're a great person. The fact that you and the media can't see it is a goddamn problem. All they see is a recovering alcoholic. They wait for him to fail. They're shocked and surprised when he succeeds. It's fucking aggravating." "You didn't know me at my worst," he reminds me. "The media did. And I've lived with myself too long to be disillusioned that the bad parts of me have just magically gone away. They exist inside of me, and it's a daily battle that I'm glad you don't share." I pinch my burning eyes. "So will you stop with this?" he asks. I drop my hand and breathe in flaming determination. "It's not about what you think. It's never been about what you think. It's about everyone else. He may see himself as a villain, but I won't add to the demonization of Lauren Hale. It's my job to showcase the narrative when he's the hero. When I'm the son that idolizes him, and I need everyone to see that." His jaw cuts like a blade, his glare just as brutal. "No. No goddamn way are you changing who you are because you think the world needs to love me." "I'm not changing who I am," I combat. "It's just hair. It's just a fucking color that I'm not wearing." "Then why aren't you doing the ultra?" he refutes. "Give me another reason that you'd miss out on an experience like that. Go for it. I'm waiting." "Fuck." Off my shock, he says, "Yeah, Reich called me the other day. He said Sully told him you're having second thoughts, all because my brother ran an ultra marathon before. Maffy, do you see what's happening here?" I set my intense gaze on the star-blanketed night, and I make a decision right here. I'll do the ultra. "And you'll stop dyeing your hair," he adds. His unspoken words, you'll let this go completely. Can I let go and do nothing? Can I live with myself? I lower my gaze to my dad. I have to keep trying. He just stares at me and says, "One day you're going to look back and realize why you were wrong. You're going to understand. One day."
34. Pharaoh Keen. "What the fuck?" Maximoff mutters as he inspects a box of hair dye and then rereads the black label. We're in my bathroom, same hellishly small size as his, but no decorations exist. See, both townhouses are currently empty. No Jane or Quinn around while they spend the night in Manhattan visiting her twin brothers. So we have free rein of my place for today and most of tomorrow. "Missing something?" I ask while I'm at the sink. I fit a number two blade into my hair clippers. "Gloves." He rummages in a plastic bag of shit he just bought at the drugstore. That outing took 3 hours, extra security, and my knee in a fucker's groin. When we exited the store, a middle-aged photographer tried to grab Maximoff by the crotch. Tried being the key word. The man ended up bent over in pain. Maximoff may be used to hands all over him in massive crowds like a packed concert, people tugging at his shirt, his waist, even pulling at his hair and neck. But no way in fucking hell am I letting anyone cup his ass or grab his dick. "More disposable ones are under the sink," I tell him, and set the bladed clippers on the edge. Our eyes lock in a hot beat, and he hones in on my abs, my shirt off, and tucked in my back pocket. He licks his lips. "I can get them." Maximoff nears, then kneels and digs through the cabinet. His shoulder brushes my leg. "You look good on your knees," I say. "Even better than you," he rebuts. My lips lift. "That's not what you said last night when you came in my mouth." Maximoff shoots me a half-hearted glare. I'm gonna be honest here, he's basically smiling. Gloves in hand, he straightens up and his chest accidentally bumps into mine. Stubbornly, we don't move. His irritation and slow-growing smile surface with a look that says, "You're the one in my way." I'm definitely starting to love this whole lack of space thing. I reach up and slide my fingers through his thick hair. "So you want to match your roots then?" Maximoff stares off a little bit as my fingers skate along his scalp. He really likes that. His body shifts closer, waist knocking into mine. I rake my hand through his hair again. "It's not too late to go blue." "What?" He blinks out of his stupor. "Where'd you go?" He didn't hear me. "Blue hair, Wolf Scout," I repeat, massaging his head. His brows knit. "I like your black hair." I almost laugh. I'd pay to see what he's picturing when he tunes out his surroundings. "Okay, but I didn't mean blue hair for me, I meant for you." "No way." He turns just to grab his box of dye, but my hands drop off him. "That's something you can shelve in the never fucking happening category." I lean my side on the sink. "Isn't that the category where you placed me driving?" I give him a look. "Seems like a flexible category." He flips me off. "It's not." I watch him open the box and start to mix hair dye in a plastic bowl. Maximoff always dyes his hair himself, so the whole process isn't new for him. We share the mirror and the tight space in front of the sink. I plug in the bladed clippers. Next to me, he tugs off his shirt. "Damn, those abs." Maximoff throws his gray crew neck aside. And he suddenly asks, "You think I'm a prude?" Maximoff. That wasn't even on my mind. I remember what Kinney called him 2 days ago. "But I see it's been eating at yours." He rubs lotion on his forehead near his hairline, just so the dye won't stain his skin. "I'm just thinking about how I didn't get a piercing with my siblings, and I'm thinking about what that means, and maybe it says I don't love them enough to get one. Or it says that you're not easily peer-pressured, not even by your siblings." I stare at him through the mirror. "You refused a piercing, knowing you didn't want one. That's hot." He's smiling, and trying not to. He puts on his gloves. I push back the top, long, black strands of my hair. I'm only lightly trimming the sides. "Anyway," I say, "I don't think you're a prude, but you're definitely another P-word." I run the blade above my ear. "It better be philanthropic." Maximoff spreads dye in his hair like shampoo. In the mirror, he watches my hands more than he watches himself. My smile widens. "Pure." He blinks into a glare. "I forgot that you don't know the definition of purity." I run my blade over the same spot. "You can have a lot of sex and still be pure." I'll always see him as being genuinely good-hearted. And if anyone disagrees with me, I don't give a flying shit. His throat bobs like my words just fisted his cock. He tenses, and then slicks his hair back with dark brown dye. You know why I'm going back to my natural color? I can crack a guess, but no, I don't know for sure. I didn't want to pressure him to tell me. I figured he'd open up when he was ready. Our gazes meet through the mirror. It felt right, he says strongly. I didn't mind dyeing my hair lighter or wearing more red instead of green, but all it was doing was adding conflict to my family. So it felt right to go back. He combs more dye through his hair. I'll find another way to show the world I'm proud of my dad, just not this anymore. I trim the other side of my head. I've always believed he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, and all he can do is trust his gut instinct. He once asked what I thought, and I just said, I'd go with the option where you're not fighting with yourself. Maximoff knows who he is better than most people know themselves. If something went wrong, he'd be the first to recognize that. And I'm happy he didn't hesitate. You know I'll stand beside whatever you do, I say with a smile, tilting my head to run the blade further back. Unless it's bullshit, then I'll call you out and you'll stand beside me. What a turn of events, Maximoff says, no sarcasm present. The rebel wants someone next to him. Yeah, I want your smart ass. I hold his gaze. I've never spent this much time with anyone, not even my last client, not an ex or a friend, and if there were extra hours in the day, I'd choose to spend them with this guy. Fuck, I'm hooked. Maximoff holsters his fuck-me eyes, just to slick his hair back one last time. He snaps off his gloves, and after tossing them in the trash, he sets a 10-minute timer on his phone. Need help? He asks me. No, Wolf Scout, I can easily cut my hair myself, but no one has ever asked to help me either. Hell, it's more than cute. Here. I pass the clippers, and Maximoff comes up behind me, all confidence. I look at him through the mirror. Cut from the back of my neck upward, no higher than my ear. Got it. I clutch the edge of the sink, standing in a slight lunge, head dipped so he can reach my neck without extending his arms high. Maximoff grips my shoulder to keep me steady. Then he runs the blade across my neck. He's doing better than a good or decent job. I'd seriously believe he's trimmed my hair 1,000 times before. I remember what his brother said, how Maximoff is a pro at everything on his first try. Okay, it's somewhat true. His forest greens flit to me in the mirror. Yeah, I'm letting you help me. It's turning him on. I stretch my arm behind me and grab his ass, and then he steps nearer, his dick up against my ass. My breath cuts short. Fuck, I can feel him hardening. My muscles sear, veins pulsating. Someone's excited. Barely, he rebuts. I roll my eyes. I know what your barely hard cock feels like, Wolf Scout, and that's not it. He tries to glower, but he has serious kiss-me-fuck-me-cuddle-me eyes right now. I grit down, my dick rousing. I watch him turn off the clippers, finished, and I brush pieces of hair off my shoulders and into the sink basin. I check out the back of my hair that he trimmed. Yeah, he can do that again. Maximoff puts away the clippers. Good? Eh, barely. He shoots me 2 middle fingers and straightens up. Nearing me, I lean my shoulders on the wall and give him a slow once-over. He still needs to wash out his hair dye. Fuck, I can't stop looking at him. My nickname for Maximoff fits him better than he realizes. He's aggressive, short-tempered, and insanely protective of his pack, like a wolf. Then he's resourceful, resilient, reliant, and responsible, able to survive any situation. Those 2 words embody Maximoff Hale more than any other. For as long as I'm alive, he'll be Wolf Scout to me. He places a hand on the wall. Beside my shoulder, I unbutton his jeans, and his other hand already dives down the front of my black pants, stroking me. Fuck. A groan scratches my throat. I watch his gaze drift for the slightest second, then focuses more clearly on me. I rub his very far from barely hard cock. What were you just thinking? He licks his lips. I fucking love how you smell. This is the first time I've heard this from him. What's the scent? His muscles flex as I change grip. He curses beneath his breath before he says, mint, fresh water and man. I could push up against him, but the timer beeps and cuts us off. We retract our hands, trying to ignore the unresolved tension for right now. Within maybe a minute or two, he's buck naked in the shower, rinsing out the hair dye. While I wait for him, I grab a Celebrity Crush magazine out of the drugstore bag. He bought the tabloid to see if they mentioned the charity camp away that begins in 5 days. I rest against the sink and flip through the glossy pages. Showering, Maximoff rakes his hands through his dark brown hair, watching me while water douses him. I look up at him and flip another page. Something you want to say? It's fucking weird seeing you with a tabloid. He doesn't realize how often I have to search social media and tabloid comments for potential chaos and threats. I turn one more page, and I land on a Like Us article. I scan the giant photograph of Luna, Xander, and Kinney, the Hale siblings congregated at a booth inside Superheroes and Scones. A fan must have taken the photo. The Like Us articles have been printed in this magazine for years, and they're relatively harmless. The subtitle is always the same. The Hales, Meadows, and Cobalts. They're like us. They read books. They love movies. They go shopping. I remember years back seeing the headline, Smart Like Us, with a photograph of Jane competing in prep school mathletes. The one I clutch zooms in on Luna, Xander, and Kinney's new ear piercings. The title? Cool Like Us. Maximoff asks, Why are you smiling? They called you uncool. Maximoff rubs water out of his face and then reaches his arm out of the shower to clearly shoot me a middle finger. I almost laugh, but my phone rings on the tiled floor. I already see the caller ID. Alpha asshole. Shit. There's an 85% chance he's going to chew me out for shutting off my radio. Comms aren't even on me right now. So I bypass that headache and just text Price, I'm not on SFA. He replies fast. From camps, we can tell that Mafia is home. You need to come help vet camp away entrance. Price. I reply even faster. I already spent 6 hours vetting entrance today. I purposefully signed up for a shift while Maximoff was working at the HMC office. We need more eyes on this. You're available, so get over here. Price. I could easily shut off my phone and act like I didn't just receive that fucking demand, but if the worst happens at the camp away, just because I didn't take an extra 3 hours to vet the raffle entrance, I'd be more than pissed at myself. I'll be there. I send that one text and slip my phone in my pocket. Maximoff. He cracks the shower door. Yeah? I have to go. Security needs me. I pull on my black V-neck. Looks like he's not the only one giving out rain checks. 35. Pharaoh Keen. Sprawling green fields bleed into a bright blue horizon, oak and spruce trees jutting to the sky. Leaves are orange and red as the fall season nears an end. From a hill I spot the glittering lake and canoes stacked on a rack, inner tubes tied to a wooden dock. Maximoff uses the acres and acres of land from Camp Calloway, his aunt's summer camp in the Poconos Mountains, for his December campaway event. It's majestic, serene, but I'm also very much on duty. I'm not about to be swept up by nature, not when there are 300 raffle guests ranging from 18 to 45 in age, and they're all playing the first group activity that Maximoff scheduled, a massive game of capture the flag. Hundreds of people are split into four teams, denoted by red, green, blue, and yellow shirts and bandanas, while they run around the field and forest screaming out strategies and searching for other teams' flags. Security meanders through the crowd. We all wear black t-shirts with security in bold neon green letters. My arms haven't uncrossed. For the past 20 minutes, I concentrate solely on Maximoff, my guard not lowering. Earlier, I confiscated a knife that someone tried smuggling into the camp. Apparently, they believed they'd be fishing and cleaning their own dinner. Okay, sure. My earpiece buzzes with non-stop chatter. I saw where Yellow Team hit their flag, Donnelly says. Even though Beckett Cobalt is his client, the Triforce enlisted most of the seasoned bodyguards for the event. The Meadows, Cobalts, and Hales without their regular 24/7 bodyguards have temporary ones for 3 days. Akara is on the mic. Are you really using comms to help Jane cheat? He assumes it's Jane. But anyway, you toss it, Donnelly is Team Cobalt. I'm doing nothing, Donnelly says, accent thick on the word nothing. I spy him circling a wooded area. Blue bandana on his tattooed forearm even though he's not playing. Maximoff sits casually on a tree stump, stuck in Blue Team's jail until one of his red team members tags him out. I relax for a second, propping my shoulders on an oak tree. His eyes flit briefly to me, a smile in them. He runs his fingers through the dark brown strands of his hair. Somehow he appears a few years older with his natural shade. I still can't get over it. And he found an alternative to lightening his hair. He's wearing Thor camping socks right now. Plus, He had Luna draw Spider-Man figures on his Timberland boots. It's his way of shouting, I love my dad, to paparazzi, who will take money shots, and to anyone who will listen. My lips begin to rise back at him. Quinn to security. Another voice is in my ear. I just overheard some girls talking about dragging someone. Should I intervene? Nah, Donnelly pipes in again. That's just fandom talk. What? Quinn asks. I click my mic. It's not a threat. Don't engage. Did I just naturally guide Quinn right there? Fucking hell, I've turned into a teacher. Ugh, I forgot my snack, Oscar complains. Does anyone have anything on them? Bro, you just ate, Quinn refutes. Like 15 pancakes. I don't see your point. Snacks are an essential part of life. And you know what? If you haven't learned that by now, we've encountered a real serious problem. Guys, my brother needs fucking help, like a snack awareness meeting. Voices pile onto one another. I lower the volume. Maximoff is out of jail, and he runs into a safe zone. He slows down as a huddle of 18 or 19-year-old girls in red shirts ogle him. I don't blame them. He's gorgeous, and my cock definitely agrees. I'm more hyper-aware of people here who are apathetic towards him. It means they're most likely at the camp away for wrong reasons. Akara already red-marked 23 names for us to watch. Their motives for entering the charity event seem suspicious. Maximoff approaches the girls, and they squeal in glee, bouncing on their toes and grabbing onto his arms excitedly. Easy there. I raise the radio volume and catch the tail end of Oscar asking for food. I click my mic. I have a protein bar. I'm by an oak tree. There are trees everywhere, Redford. I roll my eyes. Man, how badly do you want that snack? Because I'm not drawing you a fucking map. I see you. Oscar sprints past a gaggle of green-shirted guys and then stops beside me. Curly pieces of his hair fall over a rolled blue bandana. I grab a protein bar out of a first aid bag. The medic stand is on the other side of the hill, so we've dropped a few emergency bags throughout the area. This is nuts, Oscar bites into the bar. Legitimately stressed right now. I shake out my crossed arms, my muscles tight. Did you see how much money he made from the raffle? Oscar swigs his water. The numbers are already in? 70 million. Holy shit! Maximoff was glowing all morning. In truth, if he were stabbed in the middle of the night and wheeled into the hospital, he'd still declare this a success. Very few things can happen to where he called a camp away a failure. But him being stabbed would be my fucking nightmare. Quinn to security. It just said drag her again, and I know they're talking about Jane. That's violent, Donnelly answers. Still fandom language. I don't like it, Quinn says, making his opinion known. Bro, Oscar clicks his mic next to me. Get yourself a Twitter account. You're not on Twitter? Donnelly questions. He's only on Facebook, I tell the team, grinning. Donnelly lets his laughter filter through the comms. Facebook is where it's at, Quinn rebuts. Akara says, this isn't the best use of the comms. He pauses, then adds, but Facebook is better. Oscar wolfs down the protein bar and laughs. They just said Jane and Sully are canceled, Quinn adds. They're just passionate stands, Donnelly explains. What the fuck is a stan? Quinn asks and adds, all right, I really don't like this anymore. They just said Jane should go choke. I cut in. Go talk to them. That could be a threat. Or they could just be fans. When fandom culture comes into play, the lines blur. Oscar knocks his arm with mine. Look at you helping my baby brother out. He chews the protein bar with a wide grin. You keep that up, Triforce is gonna put all the green ones with you. Fuck, I curse. Quinn repeats another possible threat, but Oscar and I don't bat an eye. He tosses the protein wrapper in the red first aid bag. I hate how desensitized I've become to some of this shit. How do we even think that's normal? I know. I watch Maximoff depart from the huddle of girls. He lifts the corner of his red shirt and wipes sweat off his brow, revealing his front page worthy abs. Then he pulls the shirt up and over his head. Damn. Campgoers shriek and whip out their phones. Some must be Snapchatting a video, their cameras pointed at him for a while. A girl strolls nearby and stops dead, wide-eyed.
Oh. My. God.
I know. I stretch my arm, my blood rushing down to my dick. She whips out her phone and narrates.
He's more beautiful in person.
Accurate.
Are you guys seeing this?
She shrieks in glee to her video followers. Boners and wet pussies everywhere, Oscar whispers to me. I shove his arm. He laughs. Then we both quiet and watch a redhead simultaneously sprint and gawk at Maximoff, completely not paying attention to her feet. Like slow motion, her ankle catches on a tree root, She collapses hard with a loud thunk. Maximov saw the whole thing, and of course he's the first one sprinting to the girl. I already grabbed the first aid bag. Akar to Farrell, you're the closest with first aid. Doesn't look bad enough for a real doctor. I roll my eyes and